Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Well, welcome back to part three. Robin and I are just enthralled with this story of Sharon. We are enjoying this so much. And it is just, I think enthralling is the right word.
It is the right word. And if you listeners have not heard part one and two, you might want to hear those first, because a lot of what Sharon is going to tell us next will make more sense when you hear part one and part two. Sharon, welcome.
Yes.
I'm so glad you're here.
I just want to say this, though, because, you know, I know both families, right? And I knew both families separately. And, you know, it's so interesting when two families that you know separately are co-joined by marriage, you know, what the Lord does. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But, you know, if her father, Tim, and his family, like I said, I've known them since childhood. They were in my dad's church in Corona. And that's when I first got to know her father's family. And very, very stayed very stable. Just the most stable, salt of the earth, great people. You know, her grandfather, Glenn, they were really good friends of my parents and just kind of pillars in the church, right? And so then you've got George. And George, like, right away with the hippie movement and everything, jumped in with both feet, even though he wasn't a hippie, started these coffee houses. And and Pam and George are just, is that what the Lord's saying? Well, let's go. I mean, they are just, they're not unstable, but they just are passionate.
Spontaneous. Now, you
passionate.
Have to listen to episode
you do.
Two to hear all about
yes.
that.
And we also interviewed Pam. We've done one with Pam Markey. And you have to go back and listen to that one to get the story, because you'll get a little more insight to George.
Definitely.
I think you get some insights to George Sr. and George Jr. just a little bit. And she's another one who's so fascinating. I mean, I could listen to Pam all day long. You know, I knew George and I was always wondering who's the woman behind George. And then I met Pam and I was like, I love you. I love Pam. Just one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. So she's not yet in our story, in our timeline, Sharon's mother-in-law. So I am doing another spoiler alert. So right now we've got Sharon praying for 7 months. Is this the one? And at this point, you're attracted. You could see yourself spending the rest of your life with him. He's intelligent. He's deep like you're deep. He hears the Lord like you hear the Lord. There's a lot of spiritual commonality.
Yes.
And when Sharon's going to refer to George, it's now the son.
It's George Jr., yes.
Yes, George Jr., who has been living in Ukraine, and now he's, you guys are being set up, let's just say.
Yes.
Take it from there. But
set up by the Holy Spirit.
You want to know that this is
yes,
what God has.
Their fathers and their Heavenly Father. I love it.
Yeah, so I prayed for 7 months, and little by little, God was convincing me that that this was the one. First, it was by showing me, like I mentioned, that I was an extremist. And so I was able to let go of this idea that I had to move to a closed Muslim country, that maybe it could be Ukraine. Because I knew that George was all about Ukraine, because I'd asked him that specifically on the second or third day, might have even been day one, that we spent together, like, where do you see yourself serving long term? And I expected him to say, well, I'm in Ukraine right now, but, you know, I really feel like the Muslim world is where, but he didn't say that. He just said Ukraine. And, it all finally came to a head. I'd gotten to a point where I realized if he's who I think he is, I'm going to marry this man. But we only spent 3 days together before he left. And so I thought, well, it's probably not wise to make a decision to marry him having only spent 3 days together. There's probably some really, you know, maybe some glaring character flaws that I need to spend some time with him in person to notice and then decide if I'm okay with those, you know, for a life partner. And so we decided I was going to go to Ukraine for the summer. And the understanding was it was to decide whether or not we were going to get married. But before that, I went to a missions conference. Again, it was out at Marietta Hot Springs. And nobody there really knew that there was anything between me and George, because essentially there wasn't. We were email pen pals. It was very frustrating to George. He wanted there to be more. But as far as he could tell from my side, I was very cold, because I didn't want to lead him on. And I knew if until God told me that he was the one, I couldn't be very open with how deep my feelings were for him. Anyway, so the people there, to them, I'm just another person attending the conference. But there were many people there who knew the Markey family. And I was kind of like a fly on the wall to these conversations where George's name would come up and people would be like practically falling over themselves to praise him. He's not there. So this is the perfect time. You know, human nature is, if someone has flaws, you talk about them behind their back. That's just the way people are. You praise them to their face, right? But, and so.
So true. Yep.
So I was really intrigued because I thought, okay, he's not here. They don't know who I am, so there's no reason for them to be talking him up in front of me. And yet, every time his name comes up, people are just gushing about what an amazing young man he is. And I thought, huh, he's not only as good as I thought, he's better. Because I'm coming from it with the mindset, he's got to have some glaring flaws that I need to find out about. If they are there, people would mention them, but no one's saying anything. So I realized, wow, he's exactly who I think he is. And the thing that cinched it was I had a meal with one lady at the conference who was a longtime friend of the Markey family, and she actually knew who I was. Because when she heard my name, she's like, oh, you're Georgie's Sharon. I was like, I don't know if I'd say that yet. And she didn't, it was like she practically didn't hear me. She said, Pam Markey has been praying for a wife for each of her sons. And you are exactly what she's been praying for Georgie. Not what she's been praying for David. Not what she's been praying for Johnny, for Georgie. And I was like, yes, ma'am. You know, she was like a prophetess of old, like pointing the finger and speaking directly into my eyes and like, thus saith the Lord. And it really, it grabbed me. I was like, I'm okay. And so by the end of that conference, I realized, okay, I'm going to marry this man. And when he realized that my mindset had shifted, he proposed immediately over, we used to communicate using this program called ICQ. It was a private, like a private chat room. And so we would type back and forth there. And he realized that this conference had shifted something, and he just popped the question. And I sat there staring at the screen and the blinking cursor like, what do I say? This is the wrong schedule. Like, it was supposed to be this summer after we spend time together. And I can't say yes. I was like, well, I can't say no. I know I'm going to marry him.
And?
So I said yes.
Yay.
I was very serious about it, because I'm a serious, passionate person. I said, with God as my help, I will.
Oh, that's awesome. And how sweet of the Lord to have this prophetess woman come to you and just be as extremist in her declaration as you needed to hear, and so that you could have the confidence to reply.
Yeah.
I love how God does that in our lives. He knows what we need. And
so now, did you go to the Ukraine then after that?
Yes, so we got married. I had one semester, or after that summer, I had a semester left to graduate from university. Okay. So we got married 1 week after my final exam. And then we were in Ukraine by actually February 24th, 2003 is the day I moved to Ukraine, which incidentally was 19 years to the day before the full-scale Russian invasion.
Oh, wow. Wow. Mm.
So we ministered in Kiev for 4.5 years. The church there that George's parents had planted, his dad had passed it to a national pastor, and they, George and Pam, George, my husband's parents, had moved to Kyrgyzstan in Central Asia. It's a Muslim country in Central Asia, and were helping their son and daughter there plant the first Calvary Chapel in that country.
Wow.
In Ukraine, that first Calvary Chapel in Kiev that the Markey family planted had given birth to a bunch of daughter and granddaughter churches all over the country. Today, there are 18, I think, Calvary Chapels all over the country, despite the war. There was one that is no longer in existence because it's so close to the Russian front. They get bombed all the time and their air raid sirens don't give them any warning because they're too close. So pretty much everyone in the church evacuated from that city, but the others are still there and are serving in the midst of war. But I'm getting ahead of my story. So we were there in Kiev for 4.5 years, helping with the transition to the national pastor. And then God called us to plant a church in Western Ukraine. At that point, there were no Calvary chapels in the Western part of the country. And we had a deep love for Ukrainian culture and language. In fact, when I moved to Ukraine, my husband already spoke Russian and Ukrainian. He learned Russian first, and then he learned Ukrainian when he went to university because the language of instruction was Ukrainian. Just to show you how brilliant he is with languages, he did not speak Ukrainian, and the university's policy was that you have to take a year of special, like intensive language courses before you start the coursework if you're a foreigner. And he convinced them to waive that based on the fact that he already spoke Russian. They're not the same language. There are similarities, but they are not, you can't be a Russian speaker and understand Ukrainian. You might get bits and pieces, but it's not going to be transparent and vice versa. But he convinced them to waive that requirement, and he jumped straight into all Ukrainian coursework. And he said the first year he thought he was going to die, but he made it through and he graduated with honors. So just to tell you, he's a smart guy. Where was I? So when I moved to Ukraine, we agreed that I would study Ukrainian instead of Russian because it gave the message that we are here for Ukrainians. We love Ukraine because the country was historically so subjugated by the Soviet Union and even before the Soviet Union by the Russian Empire. And the language had been, the Russians had tried to eradicate the Ukrainian language, Ukrainian culture, and it was making a resurgence since independence. And we wanted to support that by my choice to study Ukrainian rather than Russian, which was challenging in Kiev because at the time Kiev was pretty much a Russian-speaking city. We had a few friends who were Ukrainian speakers, but it was very challenging for me to function because most people spoke to me in Russian and I wasn't studying Russian. So it took me years. I now understand Russian, although I don't really speak it. But all that to say, God moved us to Western Ukraine, where everyone spoke Ukrainian, and we started a church in the city called Ternopil in Western Ukraine, not to be confused with Chernobyl, where they had the nuclear disaster in the 1980s. And just a really, really sweet fellowship there. We were there for 8 years planning that church, and then God called us back to Kiev to the church that his parents had planted. It was having difficulties because the pastor actually had been having an affair and he confessed and stepped down. And the church asked us to come back as like interim pastor.
Okay, but she's leaving out kind of something because during this time also she's having sons. She's
And there's babies.
And there's babies. So, I mean, we're talking so many adjustments to learning the language, learning the culture, embracing it.
Yeah.
But also giving birth in the Ukraine, too. And so I don't want to get too far ahead, but how many you have? Six boys.
Six?
Yeah. And all boys. All boys. Wow. Especially coming from a family, you know, she has a sister and then she has her your half brother. But she's used to girls, you know, and six boys.
And are they all just bing, bing, bing?
So we had the first one 6 months before we moved to Western Ukraine. And then after that, we had them about every 2 years apart. So right now I have a 7-year-old and then it goes up to 18. And all boys, a lot of people, I think, assumed that we had so many because we were trying to have a girl, which isn't really true. We'd agreed to have four before we got married and then see if we wanted more after that. Because, you know, George is from a large family.
Eight. And I'd, six is small.
Actually, nine. So after they moved to Ukraine, they adopted. They adopted Kristen.
Right.
So
you're doing the midsize. But even transportation. In a country like this, right.
And supplies, again, you're still having to carve out a life that's so different than what you had grown up with in the Western world.
Yeah, well, I'll say when the Markey family moved to Ukraine, it was very rough and difficult to get things. And some of the staples they could only get because locals would give them their tickets to be able to get, because they were rationed.
Yes.
And so
yes.
as they developed relationships, sometimes locals would give them like their sugar tickets so the family could buy sugar, things like that. But by the time I moved there, I was expecting it to be more primitive than it was. It actually, Kyiv was a well-developed city and had shopping centers and malls and big grocery stores where you could find whatever.
But in the West, how was
it? In Western Ukraine, it was, yeah.
The same. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And so, yeah, I wouldn't say that. Obviously, the standard of living was lower and the roads were bad. And, you know, there were different nuances. But I wasn't that sensitive to them. Some of my kids, I have one son. Every time we came to the United States, he was always, you know, comparing because it just felt so much nicer here. But I wouldn't say it was a hardship living there.
Interesting.
You get used to, I guess you adapt and you know how to do it. And so by the time, you know, we had so many kids, it was just, we loved our life. There's advantages to a less developed life, I suppose. Like the Ukrainians live very close to the land, and we loved all the fresh produce that we get straight from people's gardens.
Ah.
One of the places we lived, we would buy our produce over the fence from our neighbors. They had this huge garden, and they grew things for market. And so, I mean, it was there's a lot of things we really loved about
now,
it.
Now, what was George's role when you went back to the church his father had founded in Kyiv?
So he was the pastor.
Okay.
So our role was just to kind of nurse the church back to health.
Right.
And so we did that for, I think we were there for 5 years. We'd made a one-year commitment. But we felt God stirring our hearts for community outreach in the city. Kyiv is a huge city.
Mm-hmm.
Officially, it was about 3 million, but a lot of people live there unofficially. They're registered in other cities, but they've moved into the capital for work. So realistically, there was closer to 4 million people in the city. And our church was a commuter church. It had started out in a residential area of the city, but because it never had its own building, it kept moving places as like, you know, because it had to find places to rent. So nobody lived near the church. Well, one lady in the church lived nearby. Everybody else came from far out. There was one family that would travel an hour and a half to get to the church. Mm. And so what you have is this dynamic where they don't have any fellowship during the week. And they don't have anyone living close by with whom they can partner with to reach their neighborhoods. And so we saw this great need for community churches. And George was trying to encourage the church in this direction, but it wasn't really catching on. And the Holy Spirit just told him, stop talking about it, go do it.
Mm.
And so he told the board, like, okay, in a year, we're going to transition out. And we feel like God's calling us to plant a community church in Ukraine or in Kyiv. And so we did that. And we God led us to this very secular part of downtown Kyiv. We never intended to go there. We wanted to go back to the neighborhood where George had grown up, but we couldn't get an apartment to rent there. The only place we could find an apartment was someone willing to let a family with six kids
boys
rent
yeah.
was this right in the middle of this very secular neighborhood in downtown Kyiv. And so we invited a team of people to move there with us, which was a financial sacrifice for everyone because it was one of the most trendy parts of Kyiv. So rents were higher, but they all moved there. God provided. And we started living this very missional life where everything we did from the coffee shops we went to going to the park, to parent teacher, you know, meetings at the schools was just to build relationships with people who don't know Jesus yet and invite them in to come see what does it look like to be part. So we created this, you know, Jesus community with our team and then just was actively inviting people to come see what it was like. And we had open potlucks at our apartment every single Sunday. And we were in a park all the time and we did English clubs in the park. And my English degree came in much more useful in Ukraine than a medical degree would have been because
Lord knows
I actually used it for tent making. For many years I was an editor for different publications in the English language in Ukraine and did some translation work. And anyway, God knows. But so when the war happened, we were in the middle of this new church plant and we were approaching ministry from a very different standpoint because of the secular nature of our environment. We realized we couldn't do church in a way that looked like church because these people thought that church was the problem. And so we peeled back. We studied the book of Acts to see what are the minimum requirements if we're going to say we're a church. And pared it down to prayer, fellowship, the word, and apparently eating, because mm-hmm. that's mentioned so much in yes. Acts. And it is. You connect in a special way across mm-hmm. food. And so we were doing that and just loving this new season of ministry. It felt like we'd finally stepped into life the way we were created to live it.
That's so beautiful.
And then the war came.
Yeah.
And it was all shattered. And I wrestled for months wondering why. It doesn't make sense, God. You were building something beautiful here. And what is the point? Why were we even doing that? And as the months passed, we evacuated to Hungary. I'm cutting this story very short, but you can read my book if you want more details.
Yes. Everyone's going to have to read this book, yes.
And God has given us a new ministry among Ukrainian refugees all over the country of Hungary.
Wow.
And what we were doing right before the war with this new way of doing church, this very pared back approach, is exactly what's needed to reach these mm-hmm, refugees. Mm-hmm. And to date, we have 6 discipleship groups in 5 cities around all over Hungary. And we wouldn't be able to do it if we were trying to do church, if we were stuck in this mode of doing church the traditional way, because it wouldn't be scalable. We are a team of 4 people, my husband, myself, and 2 Ukrainian refugee women, trying to reach a whole country's worth of refugees. And we're branching out into other countries now too, training Ukrainians in these places where they've been scattered to do what we're doing to reach the refugees around them. And it just, look, wow, God knew what he was doing. You know, he doesn't waste his resources.
Yes, he does. So beautiful, because the story is still unfolding. You're young. If anyone was looking at you as Cheryl and I are, it'd be like, how can you have accomplished so much? You seem so young, but there's just so much more, and all the training that the Lord has prepared all of you for. The fruit is going to be so beautiful.
You know, one thing that Sharon didn't mention is her husband and her many of her in-laws have been really, really involved in bringing relief to Ukraine, mm-hmm. which is just amazing. You know, Teresa and Mike have worked with you. Those are our friends in yes. England, and have done a lot of relief work. And didn't your husband help Samaritan's Purse too? And
yeah, well, he didn't help them, but he got Calvary Chapel in Ukraine to become an official partner with Samaritan's Purse, so that at one point in the war, all we had to do was call them up and say, we need this type of aid at this place, and they would just deliver it for us.
For such a time as this.
Such a time as this.
There you
so, I mean, this is just, but again, all of those setbacks, you realize God knew what was going to happen, and he was getting you ready. I mean, all the, Sharon, I think if I was going to say something about your life, it's just how you see God preparing you for the next step, and you don't always understand. I think about when Jesus washed the disciples' feet, and he says, what I'm doing now, you won't understand, mm-hmm. but you will later.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a lot of a theme running through, you know?
Yeah.
You'll understand.
Yeah.
And it's so purposeful.
Yeah, I'm just really in awe of the deliberateness of the Lord.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that all those steps, and that the all the unseeing. There's so many people that you, in the ripple effects, you don't even know how the Lord has ministered to them because you were faithful. And that always is what it comes down to with all the women we talk about on this podcast. It's an ordinary person who trusted God, and he did extraordinary things simply because they were willing to take that step of faith. And you certainly took a step of faith to marry George, because you took 7 months to get to, you know, but it was like, this has to be what the Lord has for me, even though it's not what I thought my life was going to be about. And if all of us could just really understand that, what different lives we would live of just complete surrender. Okay, Lord, you're
the
Lord.
The way is better.
I'm calling mm-hmm. you, Lord. I want to mm-hmm. really walk in that trust, so that you can accomplish in me and through me the things that you've designed from before I was even born.
So, you know, what's really is providential is for Sharon to be here at this time in this place,
yes.
and to be able to tell her story. And as we mentioned before, you've written a book, which I think, and it will be out probably by the time this airs.
Good.
It will be ready for publication, and we'll put that information
and the title
on our website.
Finding Home Again.
Finding Home
Love
Again.
Love that title.
Don't you?
Especially, Sharon, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you, because I know this is a whirlwind visit for you. But thank you for taking the time to talk to our listeners, to talk with us. We have loved it.
I was very privileged to be here. Thank you.
Yes.
For listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.